first to speak. "So, we think Sancho sold Pointier Quim, but don't know for sure because he's playing host to Cavaleros looking for the one Jack killed. He's leech food thanks to the Sludge Man, but he went berserk because we took his Tyne plaything away, and now we got her people on the sniff, looking to take her back and level some blame?" Polecat's tongue searched the inside of his mouth, and he shook his head. "What in all the hells am I missing? Because I feel like we're hip-deep in hog shit that should hardly have messed a boot." The heads around the table bobbed in agreement. Jackal remained still. He didn't much like Polecat, but in that moment he could have embraced the former Rudder. Those were the questions that needed asking, needed answering. He had to prod his brothers toward the truth and hope they sniffed out the falsehoods. Already it was happening, but Jackal was careful not to trumpet his thoughts with even the smallest body language. Next to him, Oates's large form held a similar tension. On Jackal's other side, Fetching lounged in her chair, seemingly uninterested in anything that was being said.
"Whatever more there is, we will get from Sancho," the claymaster said.
From the other end of the table, Hoodwink's bald head turned. He received a nod from the claymaster. Whatever more there was would be buried along with Sancho's gutted carcass. Jackal could not allow that. "The brothel is crawling with Bermudo's men," he said. "Let me go with Hood. Watch his back." In reply, the claymaster only glanced down the table at his favorite errand boy. Jackal followed his gaze to see what the answer would be. The black pits in Hoodwink's skull bore into him, and for one horrible instant, a twinkle of life appeared. "You can come."
"If," the claymaster amended, "we don't need you elsewhere. We're going to want every thrum close to home if we got Castile cavalry or Tynes knocking at our gate."
"You think that's likely?" Hobnail asked.
"I'll send word to Captain Ignacio," the claymaster replied. "Find out what he knows about his noble counterpart's intentions. The Castile won't be a problem, so long as Ignacio and the commoner cavaleros are on our side. At the very least, they won't ride against us, and Bermudo doesn't have the numbers to take us with just his blue bloods."
The chief paused and took a long, deep breath. He looked directly at Meade.
"As for the Tynes, I'm not the one to say."
Meade grew visibly nervous, but no more than any other fresh bastard would under the chief's attention. Jackal couldn't recall being spoken to directly by the claymaster during his first year as a sworn brother.
"Well, I talked to her," Meade ventured. "And I didn't have a lot of time, so, I mean, she's scared."
"So you didn't find out shit," Grocer said.
Meade fidgeted and made a hopeless gesture.
"I got her name."
Jackal found himself leaning forward. Thankfully, the others were too busy berating Meade to notice.
"Well, I call that a victory," Rounth said, roughly pawing Meade's head. "Our backy little elf speaker managed to coax a woman's name out of her."
"Now remember, boy," Polecat joined in, "when you bend her over, you won't see a pair of balls hanging down. Don't get confused."
Meade adopted the tense smile and slow nod long proven to help weather such sport. Oates's laughter made Jackal aware of his lack of participation. For appearances, he leaned farther over the table and grabbed a fistful of Meade's Tyne mane.
"Don't worry, she'll show you what to do. You did know that's why the Pointiers wear their hair like this, right? So their women can guide the head."
The Brotherhood erupted at the jest as Meade knocked his hand away. Jackal sat back, receiving an approving back slap from Oates. Fetching remained withdrawn, idly spinning her voting axe on the table. When the laughter died down, she looked across at Meade.
"But she didn't exactly speak."
That brought the laughter to a puzzled end.
The hoof peered at Meade.
No, he agreed with Fetch. She gave a call.
Hobnail looked disturbed.
A call?
Meade hesitated a moment, not wanting further attention.
A bird call. It was perfect, unmistakable. A starling. So I asked if that was her name, and she nodded.
Starling? Polecat wrinkled his nose. That doesn't sound elfish.
Well, that's not how she'd say it if she could, fool ass, Meade said, happy to retaliate. But it's what it means in her tongue. You mongrels would sound like that half-wit stable boy at the Castile if you tried to say it.
The one that got kicked by the donkey? Oates asked.
Fuck you, Meade. He can't help the way he sounds.
Seeing the brute's frown, the younger half-orc raised his hands apologetically. Hobnail snorted.
Oates, champion of simpletons everywhere.
I get out of this chair and hit you, Hob. You'll be one of them, Oates said.
The Claymaster was not amused.
Shut it, all of you! Meade! You telling me that right now we don't know anything else about her?
I will talk to her again, Chief. With more time...
Meade trailed off, as the Claymaster lowered his bandaged head into a swollen hand, rubbing at the rheumy eyes nestled within the stained linen. It could have been a gesture of frustration or relief.
We may not have more time, the chief said, still cradling his face. That Tyne Rountsaw points strongly to the elves looking for this girl. If they spotted her coming in, we could have trouble by tonight. That means we stay vigilant. Slops on the walls, bastards in the yard riding circuits. Meanwhile, we have to decide what to do with her.
I say we chain her up outside the kiln, Grocer said. Let her people take her back. Meade can sit out there and be ready to gibber at them if needs be. Tell the point ears we didn't harm her. Simple as that.
Hobnail and Rounth nodded at this. The Claymaster pondered. Jackal, too, was weighing the outcome. The chief wouldn't let her go back. He'd kill her rather than risk what she might reveal. Another innocent killed. Jackal found his little finger touching the handle of his voting axe. Starling. Meade had said her name was Starling.
We can't let her go yet, the Claymaster decided.
Jackal's hand twitched away from the axe haft.
She might be the only proof we have of Sancho's scheming. If the Tynes want our blood for this, I need the girl to be able to point to the whoremonger and place the blame where it belongs. We give her back now, we lose that chance.
Not gonna have that chance anyways if they come tonight, Grocer pointed out.
We'll handle that if it happens, the Claymaster said. But I want all hands here in case it does. Once we see daylight, Hoodwink will go invite Sancho to join us.
Jackal did not fail to notice his name was left out of that task.
What about the Sludge Man? Rounth asked.
What about him? The Claymaster pressed.
Sounds like it ain't certain that the Tyrkanian killed him. If he is dead, that leaves the old maiden wide open. If he's not, that leaves him with a powerful ill feeling for us. I mean, which do we hope for? Fix coming through the marsh, or the Sludge Man seeking vengeance?
That's a saddle made of thorns, Hobnail agreed.
Jackal waited for the fault of that situation to fall on his head, but again the chief surprised him.
Sludge Man slithers this way, we'll see him off. As for orcs, the hoofs will deal with them the way we always have. For now, you have your orders. Anyone unclear?
The Claymaster's head swiveled, and he gave a satisfied grunt at the nods coming from his riders.
Get to it, then!
Chairs squeaked on the floor planks as the gray bastard stood.
You three!
The Claymaster pointed at Jackal, Fetch, and Oates.
Wait a while.
Oates sat back down,
while Fetching leaned on her chair back. Jackal continued to stand, waiting for the others to clear the room and close the doors.
"This wizard," the Claymaster began slowly. "Tell me about him."
Oates blew out a bemused breath.
"He's a genuine sorcerer, Chief. Seen him do queer stuff. But he saved our hides in the Old Maiden."
"He's fat and can't ride for shit," Fetch threw in carelessly.
The Claymaster wasn't listening. His ugly, half-concealed face was fixed on Jackal.
"Oates is right. You would have been short three bastards if Crafty hadn't come with me to the marsh. I believe he wants to help the Hoof, but I can't figure out why."
None of that was a lie, but it contained little truth. The Claymaster seemed amused by his answer.
"Well, you convinced him to ride with you, Jackal. Gave him a Hoof name. Now you credit him with saving your life. Sounds like a brother to me. I'm thinking of putting his name forward as a gray bastard."
That caught Jackal off guard. He hesitated, but his friends were quick to respond. They spoke at almost the same time. Oates slapped his large hand on the table.
"Damn right!"
"Fuck that!"
Fetching exclaimed, springing upright. The Claymaster gave them each a glance, but his eyes immediately returned to Jackal. The Chief waited, patient as a spider.
"I think it's too soon for that," Jackal told him, trying to sound casual. "The others should get used to him first."
The Claymaster was silent for a long, uncomfortable span, his grin creeping all the while.
"Hells," he said at last, sounding pleased. "I guess I'm not too old to be surprised, because I cannot remember a time you three weren't of one mind."
Savoring his little victory, the Claymaster dismissed them with a wave of his swollen hand. Out in the yard, Jackal let his anger rise to the surface.
"What the fuck was that?" he demanded, whirling on his companions.
"It's called an ambush," Fetch replied, striding past him. "And you two blundered right into it."
"Only because we were led there, Jack."
Seething, Jackal quickened his pace and cut Fetching off.
"If you had been following my lead, you would have kept your mouth shut," he told her.
Fetch's hand darted out and caught Jackal's stockbow strap. She pulled him roughly forward, and her words were delivered on a forked tongue.
"I don't speak only by your leave, Prince Jackal."
Shoving him away, Fetch continued on. Only a restraining hand from Oates prevented Jackal from going after her.
"Leave it, brother."
Sick of being manhandled, Jackal threw off the thrice's grip, but he stayed put. He watched Fetching cross the yard and disappear into the distant bunkhouse. With a snarl, Jackal snatched a kerchief off his head and scratched irritably at his hair.
"And what were you doing?" he barked at Oates, "shouting support for Crafty like that."
"Didn't know it would get me hanged," the brute replied lightly. "And I don't see the trouble. Hoof needs new blood, and one that can do the things Crafty can won't hurt us."
"Unless it does."
Oates crossed his massive arms in front of his huge chest.
"You're more chummy with him than any. Now you don't trust him?"
"I trust him to help himself," Jackal said. "But I don't think he wants to join us."
"Then what?"
"I don't know, and now the Chief knows I don't. He smelled the growing alliance, Oates, between me and Crafty. Maybe the wizard even told him. He certainly told him plenty already. Our position in the Hoof is getting unsteady and fast."
Oates shook his head and looked down at the dust of the yard.
"I know you want to be Chief, and when the time comes, I'll throw my axe. But until then, brother, you best quit getting angry at us, ruining plans you're making up as you go."
With that, the thrice strode slowly away, giving Jackal a heavy clap on the shoulder as he passed. The brute was right. Jackal was trying to catch mute crickets in the dark. He needed them to start singing.
Oates was already speaking with Raunth, Hobnail, and Polecat when Jackal entered the bunkhouse. They were working out the patrol order for the night. Leaving them to it, Jackal went quickly to his own room and found Crafty within, but not Starling.
"She sleeps in Fetching's chamber," the wizard explained, seeing Jackal's frown. "I thought that more tolerable should elven emissaries arrive to inquire on their missing maiden."
"I think we both know she's no maiden, Uhad," Jackal said, ridding himself of his stockbow and quiver before slumping down to sit on the edge of his bed. Crafty lowered his bulk down on the small room's single stool and rested his back against the wall.
"You use my name," the wizard said, cocking his head to the side. "Am I no longer deserving of an unimaginatively descriptive appellation?"
"That may be entirely your choice," Jackal replied. "The Claymaster proposed putting your name up for Brotherhood. Seems you've made an impression."
Crafty smiled and twisted his beard braid around one pudgy finger. "You think I bargained with him behind your back? Told him of our rescued elf, which you would rather have related yourself, in exchange for further trust and whatever other mystery terms I may have set?"
"Something like that," Jackal admitted.
"I assure you, that did not occur."
Jackal leaned forward. "You certainly told him more than I wanted. That occurred. Why should I believe the rest didn't?"
"I told your Claymaster everything he needed to know," Crafty replied. "Had it come from you, his rival, he would only have listened to the words you did not say and seen the trap. But for me, he was intent, eagerly hearing every flapping of my tongue, for he wants to trust me, so that I will trust him. This saved time. Often the best scheme is none at all. Your hoof is now in quite a scorpion pit. In order to survive, its current leader needed to be made aware of the dangers quickly. But that does not mean I betrayed his successor."
Jackal glanced at the closed door. Crafty was not making an effort to whisper. Any ear pressed to the wood could not have failed to hear their discourse. Jackal chose not to let that worry him. Let the word get back to the Claymaster that Jackal and the wizard were closeted away in conversation. It could only bring further fears to the old man's brain.
"Out of curiosity," Crafty said, lowering his voice with mock caution, "how would my joining the hoof transpire?"
"I thought you had no interest in being a bastard."
"I don't. But it would behoove me to know the process, no? You said it took two to propose a new member."
"Not when it's the chief putting you forward. The Claymaster's word is law. Unless one of us disagrees. Any member can cast a vote against the chief's order by throwing an axe into a stump behind his chair. It is no different from any other decision he makes."
Crafty blinked slowly. "Symbolic, yet not subtle."
"It's a challenge," Jackal stated, "an open display of aggression against the Claymaster's will. Once an axe has been cast, others may join the opposition. If the majority of the hoof disagrees, the chief's order fails or is amended by the brother who first threw."
"And if the vote fails?"
"All opponents retrieve their axes with no consequence, except the original. Whoever first throws against the Claymaster must stand before the stump and allow the chief to throw an axe. Refusal to do so is craven, and cowards are not tolerated within the hoof. A true bastard will stand firm and accept whatever fate comes."
"And hope your Claymaster is feeling merciful," Crafty said, with grim humor.
An image of Warbler appeared in Jackal's mind, the same as it did every time he came to table and saw the lone axe embedded in the stump. "Only a fool would hope for that," he said.
"If," Crafty said, drawing the word out very slowly. I was to be put up for your fellowship, and none dared oppose. What then?
You could refuse, Jackal told him, but that would be a great disrespect to the Grey Bastards, and you would never again be welcome here. You would be escorted from the kiln to the borders of our lot. To return would be a mistake.
Crafty looked impressed. So all the Clay Master must do, if he wishes to be rid of me, is embrace me.
Unless a vote is cast against your inclusion and won. Then you have not refused, but simply been denied by the hoof. Like all of the slopheads who have not been found worthy, you could still remain under the protection of the hoof, so long as you were of some service.
Like growing grapes in your winsome town?
The wizard asked, his eyes dancing within his plump face. Or advising the new claymaster, Jackal offered pointedly. Crafty's white teeth shone.
And so here I am, between old and new. I wonder, what will be the outcome?
The same that always happens when two men wrestle with one knife, Jackal answered. Chapter 15. Jackal waited sleeplessly for his watch to begin. The ceiling of his chamber kept beckoning his eyes to open and stare at the timber struts above, little more than wide bars of heavy shadow in the gloom. Crafty had long since departed to seek his own repose, leaving Jackal alone with a guttering candle and the choppy sea of voices in his head. Several listless hours later, he heard the door of Fetching's room open and shut across the hall. His own opened a crack, admitting nothing but a voice.
You're on girl guard, Jack.
Not closing his door, nor waiting for a response, Fetching withdrew. Her familiar footsteps dwindled as she left the bunkhouse to take her turn riding circuit in the yard. Jackal sat up in his bed and swung his legs over the side, letting out a breath. Oates had helped set the watch rotation, pairing Fetch with Grocer and Polecat, and himself with Hood and Hobnail. Clearly, neither of Jackal's friends wanted his company this night. He took up his weapons and slid out to Fetch's door. He eased it open. Starling was asleep on the bed. A lone blanket lay rumpled on the ground, where Fetching must have rested. This small evidence of kindness surprised Jackal, but he immediately cursed himself for a fool ass. Fetch wasn't cruel by nature, just hard, the way a bastard should be. They were all forged in the heat of Ulwandulas, tempered by the pressure of the Badlands and quenched in the brackish water of life in the hoof. Perhaps it was Jackal who was losing his edge, softening to brittle scrap. Fetch had lost no sleep over killing Garcia. Likely she would not have lost any over the Cavaleros in the farrowing shed had she been tasked with their slaying. Would she have killed Starling at the river if he'd agreed? He didn't know. He only knew he couldn't. Standing in the doorway, looking at Starling's slumbering form, he was seized with a need to wake her, gently, with soft touches and tenuous words, or roughly, with lusty snarls and a fistful of her hair. It didn't matter. Jackal wanted her eyes upon him, be they filled with trepidation or fear. If she had made him soft, he wanted to prove it, to show it. Would she allow a mongrel hoof rider to touch her in comfort? It was doubtful. But her rebuke would permit him to retaliate. He could become what she thought him to be, and delight in her fear, rid himself of all thought of her well-being with rough caresses, leaving her bruised and sobbing. For that was the mongrel needed to lead a hoof. A mongrel without mercy, one that slits throats, bartered flesh, took what he wanted from helpless girls. He stood there a long time, despicable visions fomenting within his skull,
So lost was he in vain hopes and dark fantasies that Jackal failed to notice exactly when the elf's eyes opened. She had not stirred, not even a twitch, yet two tiny glittering reflections of moonlight appeared in the silhouette above her sharp cheekbones. The pair of nearly imperceptible lights shone at him, unblinking. Jackal, already motionless in his brooding, froze. He felt ashamed as Starling's eyes lifted the rock of his mind and beheld the crawling things beneath. Unable to retreat, he simply stood and weathered the intractable motes until Starling rolled over to face the wall. He could see in the tension of her slim shoulders that the girl held her breath. Revulsion bubbled in Jackal's guts as he shook off his musings. He took one step into the room, closed the door behind him, and lay down on Fetch's thin blanket on the floor, refusing to glance sideways at the bed lest the perverse demons arise again. When Fetching returned, hours later, Jackal arose. "All quiet," she reported, answering the question voiced only by his lingering. Passing her by without a word, he left the bunkhouse. A slophead awaited him outside, with hearth fully saddled. Jackal mounted up and rode swiftly for the hogback, glad to leave the waiting behind. The claymaster had commanded that the kiln not be lit. Their supply of timber was low, and keeping the walls filled with deadly heat was a waste of fuel against an enemy that would likely sneak over the parapets in small numbers. The hogback was the most vital point to protect, as any raiders who made it into the yard could lower the great ramp and provide their allies a direct route into the kiln. 10 slopheads stood guard around the works, 5 on the ground surrounding the hogs yoked to the gears, and 5 on the wall above. The hogback was also the point of convergence for the circuit riders, as well as the place to relieve shifts. Polecat and Rounth sat their hogs beneath the dark mass of the device. Jackal reined up in front of them. "Bunk time," he told Polecat. The hatchet-faced mongrel sighed with relief. "Fuck, finally. I got Sissy waiting in my bed. Luck, brothers." Polecat urged his barbarian into a fast trot and was away. Jackal was both relieved and annoyed he had not known Sissy was in the bunkhouse. He might have visited Polecat's room before going in to guard Starling. It would have been foolish to leave the elf unattended, but the release would have been welcome. Sissy would likely not have minded. "And my shift's just half over," Rounth said mournfully as Polecat vanished into the night. "Better that than just begun," Jackal told him, then motioned at the slopheads. "And these poor shits are here all night." Hearing this, the younger half-orcs all stood a little straighter next to their spears, trying to appear fresh and alert. Jackal recognized Biro, the slop who had escorted him back from Winsome amongst the lower guard. "It's nights like this that will be remembered if your names ever come up for brotherhood," Jackal told the slopheads. "Stay vigilant and keep a close watch." The hopefuls all visibly recommitted themselves to their task, and Jackal gave Biro a slight nod. "You done inspiring the arrow fodder?" Rounth asked, playing his part in the delicate dance of supportive degradation used when addressing the hopefuls. "We need to dizzy these hogs." "What pace did you and Polecat use?" Jackal asked. "Piglets. Figured on feathers next." Jackal nodded. "Feathers, then guard dog. Figure out the rest on the third pass."
"Got it."
Rounth rode past and headed west along the wall. Jackal took the opposite way and spurred Hearth into a trot for 40 counts, then into a full gallop for 40. The hogs were well trained to these paces and picked up on the pattern quickly. Such practices made it difficult for skulking intruders to time the patrols, and also ensured the circuits met at certain points along the wall. With feathers, Jackal and Rounth would pass each other at the tunnel gate first, and again back at the hogback. During his first circuit, Jackal would mostly watch the parapets above to see if the slops stationed there were walking the walls properly. Best to make sure their first line of defense was not slacking. He and Rounth reached the tunnel gate with precise timing. Rounth was standing in his stirrups, balanced perfectly, and windmilling his exposed cock around in one hand as he passed. The damn thing was as thick as a floppy tankard. Jackal could not help but laugh. Such buffoonery was a tradition on overnight watches, something to keep spirits high. They never did it in the presence of slops, however, so Jackal would have some time to invent a response. The night was warm and dry. The moon was nearly full, but partially veiled by a march of cloud. The stars, however, held most of the sky, providing abundant light. The Tines would be hard-pressed to enter the kiln unseen. Still, Jackal did not allow himself to become complacent. Elves were known to walk shadowy paths, and the keenest ear could be deaf to their footfalls. The kiln's walls were nearly 30 feet thick at the base, making the yard within much smaller than the view from outside the stronghold would suggest. It did not take Jackal and Rounth long to ride full circle and cross paths again at the Hogback. They played no pranks, but Rounth grinned challengingly as he rode by. Jackal urged Hearth into the guard dog pace, which was slower and steadier than the previous pattern. This meant Jackal had until the stables to come up with some jest. This circuit, he placed most of his attention on the interior of the fortress. The kiln was designed so that the oval yard was mostly open ground, allowing for quick rides through the compound and giving intruders few places to hide. The center of the yard was dominated by the structure that gave the stronghold its name. Its round, bloated bulk was imperiously entrenched behind the curtain wall, crowned with its towering chimney. This keep essentially split the yard in two, with space to its east and west for three hogs to ride abreast. The northern half of the yard contained the meeting hall, Claymaster's domicile, and supply hall, along with the Hogback. The southern half was more crowded, and home to the stables, breeding pens, farrowing shed, bunkhouse, slophead barracks, and the tunnel gate. When he reached the southern yard, Jackal took special care scanning the dark alleys between the buildings for movement. It was important that no one roam about, to avoid false alarms. The slopheads were all standing sentry on the walls, with a few on duty in the stables to keep the bastard's hogs tended and ready. Amongst the Brotherhood, only the circuit riders were to be out, the others snatching what rest they could in their bunks. This also placed the meat of the hoof close to Starling, should the elves make an attempt to reach her. The sows and piglets were all bedded down in the breeding pens, content in their hovels and filling the warm air with familiar, earthy stink. Passing the stables, Jackal peered in without easing Hearth's trot, and was pleased to see a pair of slops brushing down a barbarian while a third guard stood outside. His mind had been on the patrol, and Jackal realized he had forgotten to come up with a counter to Rounth's cod-woggling. Looking ahead, he prepared to catch shit. But there was no sign of his partner. The guard-dog pattern put the greater ground to cover on the westward rider, so it was possible Rounth had merely fumbled the pace. Jackal urged Hearth to quicken, passing the tunnel gate and coming around the southern loop of the wall. Still, nothing. Jackal breathed a curse. If Rounth was pissing about, he was going to get a thrashing. Looking around, Jackal reined Hearth to a stop, giving Rounth every chance to spring a hog-shit prank. But the thick-dicked mongrel did not appear. Swinging his stockbow around, Jackal yanked back on the string and loaded a bolt. Training the thrum at the interior of the yard, he kicked at his hog and set off to complete the circuit at speed. The slopheads manning the Hogback were confused to see him return alone. "You haven't seen Rounth?" he demanded of the group, and was answered with shakes of the head. he'd bit back another curse. "Should I run and rouse the others?" Biro asked, ready to be of service. "You stay where you are," Jackal growled. "No one moves from this spot, understand?" The second round of nods was still bobbing when he rode off, cutting directly across the yard. He passed the meeting hall and Claymaster's domicile, and only briefly considered waking the chief. The old man's bellowing and blame-seeking would only slow Jackal down. Better to handle this quickly. When he reached the keep, Jackal pulled Hearth to the right and headed for the western part of the curtain wall, back to Rount's first half of the circuit. The whitewashed walls of the supply hall shone ahead, lonesome and quiet. Jackal was about to ride by when Hearth grunted in complaint and pulled stubbornly toward the building. Knowing when to trust his hog, Jackal gave the animal its head. Hearth trotted around to the back of the structure, where the shadows lay thickest. Rounth's hog stood in the darkness, still and nervous. The barbarian's saddle was empty. Jackal eased Hearth closer and dismounted, covering the eaves of the supply hall with his stock bow as he carefully approached the hog. Other than a spasmodic quivering at the shoulder, the animal was completely motionless. Jackal knew it was hurt. With soothing noises, he came around and gently took hold of one of the beast's swine yankers. He pulled just enough to turn the hog's head away from the building wall, squatting as he did so. Leaning to get a view of the hog's other side, Jackal hissed. A deep gash yawned wetly in the barrel of the animal's belly, sagging intestines plugging the wound so that there was little blood. As soon as he released the tusk, the hog buried its face back against the shadowy plaster, resuming its spooked stillness. Inspecting the saddle harness, Jackal saw that all of Rounth's javelins were there, as was his signal horn. Whatever had happened, it was swift. Jackal resisted the urge to sound his own horn and raise the alarm. That would only bring everyone running to his aid, which was little use. The enemy was not here, just the evidence that they were within the walls. Drawing the slopheads away from their posts could only help the intruder. Searching the dust, Jackal found the animal's blood trail. It appeared to lead around the other side of the supply hall. Leaving Hearth with the other barbarian, Jackal followed the splatters, his stock bow pressed into his shoulder. He stalked around the corner of the hall and continued to allow the blood to guide his feet. Soon, he found himself at the curtain wall. He could see the tracks made by the patrol riders, the freshest left by Hearth when he and Jackal had ridden by at a gallop in search of Rounth before checking at the hogback. The blood would have been impossible to see at such speed, even with half-orc eyes. Thinking quickly, Jackal shot a look upward, craning his neck to view the rampart. He began a silent count. When he reached 80 and there was no sign of a slophead patrol, Jackal growled and rushed for the nearest stair, taking them two at a time until he reached the battlements. Whirling in either direction, he quickly ensured the wall was clear of foes. Nothing moved, but the rampart was not entirely vacant. A body lay along the wall walk to the south. Jackal rushed over to find a young half-orc sprawled with a spear still clutched in lifeless fingers. His head was wrenched at an unnatural angle above his shoulders. Jackal ran to the outward-facing edge of the wall and stole a look over the parapet. Below, the starlit scrub of Ulwandulas was mute and empty. There was no Tyne raiding party scaling the walls, at least not here. Jackal hesitated. If he ran north along the wall, he would reach the hogback, the most likely spot for an assault if the elves wished to bring larger numbers into the kiln. But south lay the bunkhouse and the object they sought. Starling. Jackal stuck two fingers in his mouth and let loose a shrill whistle before breaking into a sprint. He ran south. Glancing down, he saw Hearth racing through the yard below, keeping pace with Jackal's progress along the wall. His boots pounded the planking, his stock bow clutched in both hands at the ends of his pumping arms.
"Halt!"
A challenge rang out ahead of him. The voice was loud, yet twanged with uncertainty. Jackal answered the slophead in a voice made of iron.
"Keep to your post! We have intruders within the walls! Keep to your post!"
He sped by the sentry without stopping, ignoring the half-leveled spear. To his left, the mass of the keep seemed to crawl by, and Jackal pushed himself to run faster. He lost Hearth for a moment, as the hog was forced to travel closer to the wall to pass the great central structure. Two more sentries issued challenges and were answered as the first. As soon as he cleared the keep, Jackal again caught sight of his mount and his destination. The bunkhouse was a long, narrow, three-story building that rose to almost half the height of the rampart. The span of empty air between the two, however, was daunting. Not wanting a loaded thrum in his hands during what he intended, Jackal jerked the tickler of his stock bow, launching the bolt out over the wall into the night. Keeping his eye on the roof of the bunkhouse, he darted left, angling his steps, and jumped. There was a heartbeat of weightless wonder. Jackal nearly choked on the next heartbeat as his leap quickly transformed into a plummet. His feet smote the roof a hand's breadth from the edge, shattering tiles as his legs buckled, the shards piercing his knees. He fell forward, catching himself as tiles began to slide out from under his scrabbling boots, falling to the yard below. Finding his balance, Jackal stood and slung his stock bow behind him. He moved over to an unspoiled section of tiles and lowered himself slowly over the lip of the roof until he hung from his fingers. The windows of the bunkhouse were little more than arrow slits, but they made decent handholds. Kicking forward, he reached out with his right hand to grab at the nearest window and managed to hook the upper sill. The rest of the descent was a simple matter of crawling down from window to window. Hearth awaited him at the bottom, falling into step beside Jackal as he made his way around the bunkhouse, reloading his stock bow on the move. The door was flung open just as he reached it, revealing Hobnail and Oates with thrums leveled.
"Hells," Hobbs swore, stretching his fingers away from his thrums tickler. "What the fuck are you doing? Trying to die?"
"They haven't been here yet," Jackal said. It was not a question. He spun to cover the yard behind him.
"Talk to us, brother," Oates urged.
Jackal backed up a pace, but continued sweeping the shadows. "The Tynes are inside. At least one slop on the palisade dead, and Rounth is missing."
"What?"
Hobnail demanded. Rounth was his ranging partner. "Found his hog hiding behind the supply hall, nearly gutted."
"Fuck!"
Jackal felt Hob try to run out, heard Oates hold him back.
"Not alone,"
the thrice rumbled.
"Then you two fucking come on!"
A tense silence settled behind Jackal. He could sense Oates looking to him. Turning, he found he was right.
"Take Grocer and go," Jackal told Hobnail. "I don't take orders from you."
Jackal spoke quickly.
"It's not an order, Hob. It's the damn smart thing to do. Fetching and Mead need to stay here with the girl. Oates, you too. We are going to need our main strength here for when the Pointiers do make a run for her. Is Crafty still here?" "Took a room on the second floor," Oates replied.
"Good. Get him too. Hood and Polecat need to reach the chief. Make sure he's aware and safe." Jackal turned back to Hobnail's simmering face.
"That leaves Grocer to help you find Rounth."
"And you?" Hob asked through a mouthful of loathing.
"I'm going to the Hogback," Jackal told him. "Make sure the slops hold."
Oates shook his head.
"Same rules, not alone." "I'm going to ride fast," Jackal said, already swinging a leg over Hearth. "And I won't be alone once I'm there unless something has gone very wrong. It's the best way to divide our numbers."
Hobnail hadn't cared to wait through the debate, and was already back inside, gathering the others.
"Let me go with you," Oates said. "Three on the girl is plenty."
"I need you here," Jackal insisted. "With Crafty at your back, you and Fetch can hold off an army. And you might need Mead if the Tynes decide to talk."
They've already killed a slop, brother. The time for words is burnt.
Jackal nodded grimly.
I know. With that, he punched his heels into Hearth and rode away before Oates could say another word.
Jackal rode directly east, past the lower curve of the keep. He needed to reach the hogback with all haste, but the slopheads in the stables needed to be told of the danger and get a head start on readying the hoof's mounts. After, Jackal could cut up along the eastern wall and get a look at the stronghold's other half. The tines had to be somewhere. He could hear the hogs squealing before he reached the stables. Something was wrong. Fearing fire, Jackal surged ahead. When the building came into view, he saw no flames, no smoke, but the slopheads were down. Jackal could see them in the glow of the lanterns, lying in beds of red straw. He rode his hog directly into the stable and jumped off on the move. One of the slops still moved. The poor youth was feebly struggling to keep his life from flowing out of his ruined throat. He was failing. Jackal knelt beside him, knowing there was nothing to be done. Their eyes met, and the ebbing light in the boy's read the inevitable in Jackal's. "How many?" Jackal asked. Unable to speak, the young half-orc raised one finger, sticky with blood. The hand fell. Gritting his teeth, Jackal rose, turning away from the body and sweeping the stable with his thrum. The surrounding stalls emitted a horrible chorus of screams and squeals from the hogs. The wood resounded with the strikes of hoof and tusk. The barbarians were crazed, fighting to be free of their pens. They were war mounts, bred for battle. The blood of three young half-orcs should not have stirred them to such fearful frenzy. Icy realization seized Jackal's guts. It wasn't the tines. As if sensing his awareness, the orc stepped out from an empty stall at the far end. The large, curved knife in his hand dripped. His dark gray flesh was further darkened by smears of soot, applied for better concealment in the dark. He wore no armor, nothing that would glint in the night, just a simple leather clout about his loins. Since entering the stable, Hearth had grown steadily agitated, the behavior of his caged kin building within him. The hogs sensed the greater predator, their natural inclination to flee replaced, through the careful selection of their forebears, with a need to attack. Seeing the orc forced Hearth to charge. Jackal reacted quickly, dropping his stockbow and seizing the barbarian by the swine yankers, stalling his rush. He could not allow him to be butchered. Digging his heels in and pulling back with all he had, Jackal was only dragged a stride or two before managing to stop the beast. The orc continued to stand at the rear of the stable, his long lower fangs bared with brutish amusement. Jackal needed to mount up to get full control of Hearth, to ride out of this enclosed space. To do so was to flee, however momentarily, and the mocking smile on the thick's face would not allow him to. Pulling hard on Hearth's tusks, Jackal forced him around to face the doors and gave him a hard swat on the haunch. The hog, long trained to the hand of his rider, trotted out of the stable. Jackal's stockbow still hung from its strap, down by his left thigh, but the bolt had fallen free. The orc would close the distance before he could reload. Ficks were always bigger, but they were rarely slower. Keeping his eyes on the grinning beast, Jackal hooked the thumb under his thrum strap and freed himself of the weapon. He drew his tulwar and dagger, filling his hands with sharp steel. This only widened the Thick's amusement.
"You won't die in the saddle, half-blood," it said in the foul tongue of orcs. "No," Jackal replied in the same language. "I'll be balls deep in your eye socket."
He launched himself at the orc, robbing its chance to charge. It hunkered to receive him, so big its head remained level with his own. Jackal made a reaping cut with his tulwar,
leading with the longer blade to force the orc to give ground, wanting to back it against the wall. But the orc gave no ground. Instead, it jumped straight upward on corded legs, throwing up one long, bulging arm to catch the lowest crook. As Jackal's sword parted the air, the orc swung itself forward and released the beam, twisting its heavy body nimbly to land, reversing their positions. The large knife was already thrusting for Jackal's spine. Allowing his missed stroke to bring him fully around, Jackal parried and responded with a cut of his own dagger, whipping it at the orc's face. The thick snapped away, the muscles of its torso recoiling, only to immediately spring back, driving a fist into Jackal's face. He rolled with the blow, avoiding the unconsciousness that hungered in the center of the colorful pain. The knife came again, and it took both of Jackal's blades to stop its edge, leaving him open to a knee sieging the gates of his ribs. Losing his balance, he careened away from the assault, making a warding strike with his tulwar, preventing the orc from pressing the attack. Nauseous and bleeding, Jackal backed up another pace. The wall of the stable was behind, his enemy ahead, empty pens to either side. The stable was wide enough for four hogs to ride abreast, but Jackal had little hope of darting past the thick, not with its frightening speed and reach. He had never faced an orc while afoot and alone. But he didn't need to win, just survive, survive long enough for the others to arrive. Hood and Polecat, Hobnail and Grocer, they should all be on their way to claim their hogs. Soon they would arrive and feather this big throat slitter with thrumbolts. Survive. Jackal waded into the waiting orc, flinging strokes with his tulwar, his dagger ready to counter. The orc had only his knife, but it was a serpent in his hands, darting with alarming speed to turn every attack. The edges of the weapons scraped and sparked, ringing amongst the drumming of the cloistered hogs. But for all the clashing of blades, the orc gave not a single step. It was a bulwark of muscle and murder, a spawn of panther grace and monstrous ferocity. Through clenched teeth, Jackal grunted wordless challenges and fought. He held to a tenuous offense, preventing the orc from attacking, yet unable to draw blood. For years, he had wondered what it would be like to fight Oates in earnest. Now he knew. Hells! Where were his brothers? Anger blossomed. Anger over the intrusion of his home. Anger over the dead slopheads. Anger over his inability to slay their killer. He slashed with both blades, foregoing all defense. The orc turned his tulwar, but neglected the dagger that raked across the brute's abdomen. Growling, the thick hammered his head down, trying to smash Jackal's face with his sloping forehead. Darting back, Jackal saved himself, but collided with the unresisting wood of the wall. Unwilling to be trapped, he rushed forward, pushing himself off the planking and thrusting with his sword. The orc slapped the blade away with his bare hand, but Jackal kept coming and punched his dagger into his opponent's thigh. With immediate vengeance, the thick slashed into Jackal's left forearm, his knife opening a vicious gash on the underside. He swallowed the pain, but his hand came away from his dagger, fleeing the injury. He chopped upward with his tulwar, and the blade sunk into the orc's side, biting into its ribs before halting. The big knife screamed for his throat. With no choice, Jackal released his sword, snatching at the orc's wrist with both hands, wrenching the blade aside. The wind left him in a rush as the orc's knee struck again, punishing his guts. Doubled over, world spinning, Jackal saw the knife coming again. He snatched desperately for his dagger, still protruding from the orc's leaking thigh, and pulled it free. He pushed the blade into the thick's descending wrist joint, arresting its stab, severing tendons. The cleaver fell from useless fingers, but the orc's other hand seized Jackal by the brigand, lifting him bodily, spinning him around before flinging him to the ground. All three blades now lay at the thick's feet, and had stepped over them contemptuously to kick Jackal before he could rise. He found himself facing the doors, his fallen stockbow halfway between him and the exit. Jackal rushed for the weapon, half-crawling, hands scrambling in the straw as he tried to gain his feet on the move. He felt a grip on his ankle and was snatched back, his chin striking the ground before his vision went sideways. Hurled through the air by his foot, Jackal struck the door of a pen. Head swimming, he found himself on the ground once more. He tried to rise, but was betrayed by his addled senses and spilled over, rolling to a slump. At his back came a recurring, violent vibration and a deafening crash, over and again. The orc had retrieved his knife, brandishing it in his uninjured hand as he lumbered toward Jackal. The grin was back. Jackal was battered and disoriented, the contents of his stomach souring within his skull. His vision was blurred and his ears roared. But he had grown up in these stables, mucked them as a youth, spent long hours mending tack and harness beneath this roof. He knew precisely where he sat. The thick was towering directly in front of him when Jackal returned its grin. Orc, meet Ugfuck. Reaching up, Jackal grabbed the latch of the pen door and pulled, leaning away. Oates's massive hog came barreling out of the enclosure, screaming with pent-up rage. Ugg struck the door aside, slamming it into Jackal and knocking him completely over. He heard a harsh, alarmed cry, followed by an awful concussive splintering of wood. The stables resonated with the crash and the increased squealing of the hogs it encouraged. Jackal got to his feet. Ugfuck had the orc pinned against the opposite wall, gored on both tusks through the belly. The hog continued to press forward, shaking his head back and forth, worrying his tusks deeper as the orc punched feebly at his shoulders. His knife lay far away, fallen to the straw. Jackal walked slowly over and picked up his stock bow, fitting a bolt to the runnel as he returned to the orc. The thick, no longer struggling, was gagging on a feast of its own blood, beyond questioning. Jackal was in no mood to talk anyway. The orc raised its bald head and looked at him. Its eyes could have lit the kiln. Holding his stock bow low at the hip, Jackal aimed. "What did I say? The eye socket?" He pulled the tickler. Chapter 16. Rounth's body was found in the slophead's barracks. The orc's big knife had taken him up under the jaw, just below the ear. It was a wound dealt to render Rounth silent, yet suffering. Death had come at a cruel pace. The slop's barracks had been empty, all the hopefuls turned out for guard duty. The orc must have dumped Rounth on his way to the stables. Thankfully, the dying slophead had been right. Only one thick infiltrated the kiln. One, and he had taken six lives. Rounth, the three slops in the stables, the sentry Jackal had seen on the rampart, and another they found in the morning, lying outside at the base of the wall, broken on the rocks. The orc had probably killed him first, snatching him over the parapet just before completing his climb. Hoodwink and Polecat had arrived at the stable moments after Jackal put the intruder down. Hobnail and Grocer were seconds behind. They responded quickly, saddling hogs and riding to secure the hogback, the claymaster, and the keep in that order. Oates, Fetching, and Mead were pulled away from Starling, leaving only Crafty to watch her. The threat of the Tynes coming for her was nothing compared to a night raid of orcs. Dawn broke, with no further sign of the enemy. The gray bastards rode out, squinting against a fresh sun, each member in full kit, to sweep their lot. Winsome had slept soundly, unmolested and unaware of the bloodshed. Jackal breathed with relief when he saw Beryl and the orphans safe. The Claymaster quickly addressed the